This podcast is brought to you by PrideNZ.com in association with the Butch Femme Queer Feminist Elders Afternoon Tea. Kia ora koutou. I'd like to pay our respects to Ranganui above, Papatūānuku below, and their children forevermore. Our respects also to Mana Whenua and Ngāti Whātua, whose lands we meet on. And a big warm welcome to all our ancestors here with us today who enable us to be here. Acknowledgements to all of you who have come from all different parts of everywhere and for coming to particularly kind of share stories and experiences, and also I guess to celebrate and heal. So thank you very much.
So welcome. This is a public talk that's a part of a weekend we've been holding, talking, well, people who identify as femme or butch or switch, and queer and feminist. And this is the first time we're kind of aware of this happening in New Zealand. So that's really kind of like exciting historically. I kind of just want to acknowledge that. And I also feel kind of in queer contexts, we don't really have much intergenerational contact. So I think this is just a really amazing experience to actually, well, for me anyway, to come and hear from my elders. And the other thing I was going to say on the poster where we did the advertising, does anyone know who that couple was? That's the posters, the picture's just up here. That's Leslie Feinberg and Minnie Bruce Pratt, who are two really amazing butch femme elders from America. But I kind of feel like in New Zealand we're doing this stuff without necessarily having the books or the community or the culture to place us here. And so these are my elders that I found from overseas, but I'm really excited to be talking to elders that are from here and have been doing this stuff for a while. So we can figure out how to locate ourselves right here. And I'm really hoping this is the beginning of more community and more connection in with this stuff. So I just kind of want to thank you all for coming and being a part of that.
O ko te tūtahi, ko ngā toki mata whāuru o tuaka, ko hokianga te awa ko ngā puinui tonu tiwi, ko Māori with lava toku ingoa. Hēnā kōrua, thank you very much for the invitation. It took me a little while to sort of go, what? Elder? I'm an elder here, you know. I would like to acknowledge some of our other elders in the room. Kia ora. Haven't seen you for a while. Well, saw you last week, Jenny. So I think you wanted me to talk for like 10 minutes, and I'll try and do that. And I haven't really planned anything. I might start with a poem, and then that sort of leads into a few things. I thought you wanted some pills of wisdom or something that might be useful. This is called Scars. Extreme sportsters compare with pride their marked bodies, proof of their adventures, each one a rush. I've had adventures, some extreme where nicks and chunks or a slice has left me scarred. There's a small spot high right thigh where a belt buckle dug in during sex. It darkens in the sun, like that relationship one summer long, but dark as a nuclear winter. My perfect nipple, too, was trashed that year, pierced with gold too heavy, a white road left where it travelled out. There used to be a crescent moon on my shoulder. It's disappeared, like the friends that put it there. A relationship that burned deep, went pussy, healed and slowly faded away. That's all that's left of some people. Other people they've scarred. Kia ora. Sorry to start on such a heavy note, but I do have... I am a survivor of child sexual abuse, and so I didn't have a very good sort of start into the whole sex thing, and then was pretty much out on my own living in the world as an independent at 16. And back then, I'm a bit sensitive about my age. I don't really like to say how old I am, but I will because I have been invited as an elder. I'm 51.
Yeah.
Sorry?
She says bring chicken.
Yeah. So back then, being sort of cast into the world in the 70s as a 16-year-old to just basically be an adult, nowadays people sort of don't think of doing that to their kids. Back then it was quite common, and you know, you were an adult, but totally unprepared, you know, and had no idea of how to cope. I used to think of myself that I was just like, you know, at the fair, and they have those shooting things where you shoot the ducks. Well, I was one of the little ducks, and that's what it was like. I was just like in that game, and people would take pot shots at me, and occasionally some of them, quite a lot of them, got lucky. I wasn't so lucky though, because I really hadn't, any idea about what I wanted in life, and what turned me on and what I might be interested in. But I guess I learned a lot from all of those experiences, and you do experiment, and I think, you know, the main thing I would like to encourage you all younger ones to be careful, protect yourself and look after yourself and each other, but particularly, you know, try to, you need to be brave, you do need to work out, perhaps, I was going to say work out what really, really turns you on, but that's kind of hard, and so you will experiment and you will have relationships that don't quite gel, you're not quite compatible. And then, you know, you have another relationship, and it might be better to it might be better to think about what your limits are. You know, I was once asked, you know, well, you know, what are you into? Oh, you know, anything. Oh, okay, if I can do anything to you, yeah, please do anything to me. You know, I was that eager. And so she said, well, can I cut your hair off? I'm like, no. No, you can't cut my hair off. Okay, so you do have boundaries, you know. Can I leave scars? No scars. You know, so think about the things, you know, what are the boundaries? What can people not do to you? And maybe work backwards is a good way. Rather than, oh, okay, what are you into? What should we do? What should we do in this scene or that scene? Or so think about what people can't do to you. That's maybe easier. So the other thing, I'll just read another poem here, which is just about there being lots of different cultures. And I've moved in and out and belong to a number of different cultures. This one's called Stuck Between Worlds. It's quite an old poem now, but can I be 9-to-5 Māori, a 24/7 slave? A vegetarian who sometimes eats meat, speaks two languages but never in the same room, visit family like a tourist, leave my lesbian sexuality on the doorstep with the shoes at the marae, assert feminist values of equality for all, but crave the dominant of my master. Can I weave together these strands, or do I tack left, right, left, buffeted by these contrary identities? And that's pretty much what it's been like. Lots of different identities in this very modern, contemporary world. You can move in one culture for a while and then you end up in another one. And I feel comfortable going to the different ones. As long as I know who I am, so I can come here and be with you today, and then most of the week I'm a mum. And that's another pearl of wisdom I did want to pass on, is... don't miss out on that, and don't leave it too late. I'm very lucky that we have amazing technology these days. Otherwise, I would have missed out on having my daughter, and she is one of the best things that's ever happened to me. But I left it really, really late, as lots of lesbians and gay and bi, transsexual people, maybe not so much the bi, but, you know, do. If you don't have ready a source of sperm, so to speak, right there, every, you know. But, you know, even gay guys think, no, that's not part of being a gay man, or, you know, it's not part of our culture's LGBTI. But it can be, and it should be, and as Māori, of course, it definitely is. So please don't see that as not part of your world. We need to be parents. We need more diverse people to be parents so that there will be more children in the world who are okay with that and we can grow that diversity. And that's about something we pass on to kids as well. So my daughter's an artificial, she's IVF and ICSI. So she was an IVF baby, means she was in the little plate thingy, whatever it's called, petri dish. But we also had to do ICSI, which is intracytoplasmic sperm injection, which is fantastic technology these days. But, so it is there, and even if you don't want to, do it naturally, there's lots of ways to be a parent. Don't wait for the white picket fence and the perfect partner. They may not come along. In fact, they may not come along until you've got the child. I was very lucky. I did have a gay friend who agreed to be a sperm donor, and then after almost a year of trying, it didn't work, and then we ran out of banked sperm. And by that time, I was being a bit naughty and playing around and experimenting in other sort of in another culture. And I asked a guy I was playing with if he would be a donor for me. And so then he trotted into the clinic and deposited, and it worked first time. So, and we're still together today, and that's nearly 10 years. Not anything I ever would have thought would happen. Sometimes you just have to be open to the unimaginable. We don't identify as heterosexuals, and it kind of really annoys me that's the way everyone will see us, but, who cares? Our daughter is what's most important, and we know who we are, we're quite comfortable with that, and the focus at the moment is on her, not so much on the sexual identity side of ourselves. It's all about work and raising money and developing and having a financial security is very important. Please learn about money. The way to look after yourself, to protect yourself, is to develop your independence. That means your financial independence, so you're not dependent on other people. You've got to learn about power. One last poem, because you mentioned about the book, and so this is from the book Indigenous. I can't remember the title. Stories of.
Something about Indigenous sexuality.
Stories. Yeah. That's right. It's a great book, and it's often on Trade Me for a dollar or something. So, this is called Pound Me. There used to be a club in Wellington called The Pound. I don't know if you people might remember. The Pound? No. Lido meal, loud with discourse. You talk sex, say fuck. Me spill sluttish secrets. Later at The Pound, chokingly thick with smoke, throbbing hot with beat, we dance around each other, you lanky angular boy, me lace softened girl. Choreographed fantasy, you packing tight Y fronts dick and thrusted, me bowing forward, ass lifted ready, rapid playful ramming, you drag king, me audience to your desire. Wet through we leave, sweat cools quickly in the 4 a.m. air. You, gentleman escort, polite. Me, damsel, enthralled, waiting. Kia ora koutou.
Kia ora koutou. I guess I'll just do a little bit of a personal story of my experiences and some thoughts that I've had throughout the day. Like Marewa, I feel, an elder. Crikey, haven't really done anything to kind of warrant that mark of respect. And I certainly want to acknowledge, those who are much older and much wiser than myself. Particularly as a source of inspiration for me has been
the lesbian feminist woman who really fought around the visibility issues, which are still, you know, it's still important, still very important for so many of us. So I want to acknowledge that. And in talking about, you know, butch, femme, queer, trans identity kind of space, I want to acknowledge that those, you know, those other perspectives are really important as well within our communities. Okay, so on to, I guess, my little personal jaunt. I came out in 1986, which was homosexual law reform year, and there was a lot of people outing themselves as a political act, which was very important at that time. And there was no space for uncertainty. So, you know, you had to out yourself, which was very important, and you had to out yourself the whole way. There was no space for sitting in between for questioning at that time, and I'm really glad that now there is much more space for different kinds of questioning and people going on their journey at whatever time and space they can, you know. So I came out wholesale to everyone I knew at a student conference, including my sister, and I saw the look on her face at the back of the room thinking, I probably should have spoken to her first. But, you know, that was interesting. And shortly after that, I, you know, I was chatting to some elders. I said, how do I meet other women? And they were like, you need to cut your hair and dress like a dyke. So, you know, that's how we identified ourselves in those days and, you know, made ourselves visible. So this is a picture of me about, I've got props. This is a picture of me at about 19, very eraser head kind of haircut, kind of punk goth, kind of don't fuck with me kind of chewed. And it was very good and very empowering. I loved it. And there was always, for me, gender, there's always been an element of performativity about it, an element of creativity about it, I guess, which I've always really enjoyed. So that was kind of playing with that. After a while, I began to feel like that wasn't really me, that I was kind of playing with something that didn't feel quite natural. And I began, over time, to embrace more and more sort of being the sort of femme stuff. I didn't have the language for it at the time, but that's what happened. And these days, I kind of see myself as, I call myself a queer femme, because that kind of embraces everything that I am to me. I'm not a high femme because I'm far too lazy. You know, like, it's very time consuming and expensive, you know, and all, you know, all respect to women who can be that. But, you know, yeah, I think I'm more like a low down dirty femme or something. So I've just written down some ideas and things, and, you know, if I've talked too long, just tell me to move on. So I've got some photos from different times. Interesting hearing about the sort of fractured identity references. When I turned 35, I kind of decided, I created this, I had this birthday party where I had a come as your alter ego party, and I created this character for myself called Ruby Red, and so that's who dressed up in this kind of high feminist thing. And and then I decided, oh, actually, that's who I am. That's who I'm going to aspire to be, you know, so this sort of powerful femme kind of person. And there's some photos here. I did a sort of takeoff of the two Fridas. You know, I'm holding my own hand and that sort of stuff and different looks. And I guess at that point in my life I had, you know, quite sort of fractured identities that were affecting my mental health. You know, I'm bisexual, I'm half Jewish, which is, you know, in this country there's not very many Jews. And, you know, I sort of felt like I didn't really belong anywhere. I felt quite marginalised and quite, you know, if I pictured myself, I was all these different things that didn't quite fit together, and I felt like I didn't really belong anywhere. So I was kind of playing with that stuff, and there's some photos here of me dressed as an Orthodox Jewish woman lighting Sabbath candles, but there's only, like, one candle, and in this photo, there's a classic lesbian feminist Jewish anthology of writing called Nice Jewish Girls. And so I'm holding that book up, but I'm kind of looking sideways and sort of a bit doubtfully. So, you know, because I didn't really fit anywhere. So I was playing with all that sort of stuff. And for me, you know, being part of this wider sort of community, I guess, of, you know, butch, femme, trans, genderqueer people is really liberating. It's really powerful. You know, I love it. It's really exciting. And that's where I've come to feel more comfortable, like I can be all of who I am. I can change. I can be different things at different times. And I don't have to kind of justify that. I can just enjoy it. But I think where I became, where I realised perhaps I'm a femme, I did some reading about, it was from American writings, and it was describing, it might have even been Joan Nestle or someone, describing that experience of being a femme where, you know, you can sense this butch energy across the room. And, you know, I've always been one of those people that sort of gone weak at the knees around that kind of energy, you know, and I really enjoyed it. And I feel like I'm rambling. So I'll go back to the pictures. This is a dyke ball, probably about 2004, 2005, something like that, where my partner and I were really doing this sort of gangster mole kind of character. You know, it's really good fun. It's always been good fun for me. I think something that's really important for me about this topic and you know, having this conversation at this point in time is really good because butch femme identities and gender expressions have been historically always part of our communities, you know, and there's been times where, you know, perhaps those expressions have been a bit more silenced or a bit more not popular or whatever than at other times. And I think as queer identities become more accepted and more sort of allowed into the mainstream, it's going to be really important for us to also have those subcultures and to be able to retain those kinds of histories, identities that are so much part of queer culture and queer community. And that sort of stands in a nice contrast to, you know, being assimilated into the mainstream. Some people are really happy to be, you know, I'm just the same as everyone else, even though I'm gay kind of thing. And then there's a lot of us who, you know, see all these identities as really positive and I don't ever want to be mainstream, you know, I want to be all of who I am and enjoy being part of this world. I think that's probably enough to start with.
Thank you.
Can I just ask one question?
You
use the term high
femme.
What's that?
Oh, you mean lipstick?
Yeah, like, probably generally associated with
you look high thing, don't you?
High heels, lipstick.
Okay, I guess it's my turn. It's a bit nerve-wracking sitting here, actually, especially listening to all these amazing women talk before me. I'm Annie. I turned 50 in September. And I just love that. I feel like I'm fabulous at 50. I identify as high femme. Sometimes I'm just femme. Sometimes I'm just me. But I came out in the early 80s when I was in university in Christchurch. I was taking feminist studies at the time. And although I was fucking women from time to time, I didn't identify as lesbian even. So then I started meeting lots of amazing lesbian women. I hate that I just said lesbian women because, you know, anyway, lesbians are women, obviously, don't need that qualifier. But so I met lots of women and my partner at the time, I got together with Jen, who was doing a PhD in feminist studies. So we ended up living together, and had a fabulous time. She was kind of androgynous, and I was, I didn't really, I think I was always a bit girly, but I thought I was quite butch. Like whenever we did any kind of psychological profiling where you had to look at your personality, you know, which just measures masculinity versus femininity. Even though I'm very feminine and I feel very feminine, I'm actually, I'm way more masculine in those tests than most men turn out to be. And I think that's a thing about dominance. So anyway, so we had a lovely life for quite a few years, I think about 8 or 9 years we lived together. And then, and during that time, I was exploring my sexuality. My friend Tonya was an art student and a lesbian, and we were best friends. And she did a perspective on butch and femme. And at the time I was reading, I discovered Joan Nestle's book, A Butch Femme Desire, and I just inhaled it. I could probably still quote lots of it right now. Please don't ask me to, just in case I can't. But for me, that book was huge, because I began to realise that maybe I wasn't so butch after all, and that the people and the qualities that attracted me in a woman were masculine. I loved the masculine energy. I get all wobbly and hot, and when a really butch dyke walked in the room, I'd be wouldn't be able to talk properly or anything like that. And I was just, yeah. So anyway, Jen and I eventually split up, and I got myself the biggest butchest dyke I could find in Christchurch. And the passion that we had together was actually incredible. For the first time in my life, I think I was really breathless all the time. It was just an incredibly passionate time. Unfortunately, it grew into a very violent relationship. She had lots of violence and abandonment issues, and the relationship broke down. It actually took me a long, long time to escape that relationship in the end. So it became really ugly and tainted and all that. But anyway, so lucky for me, I met Chris online at a place called butchfemme.com. Actually, so we were quite naive actually about online stuff, and I'd gotten my first computer that I could actually even get online at the time, so I'd go in there and, you know, we'd chat away, and it was good fun, and we discovered that we loved each other after a while, which people find really bizarre that you can... He was living in Washington State. Chris is trans. FTM, female to male, transsexual. That's okay for me to say that.
Yeah.
So he was living in Washington and I was living in Christchurch. And after, I think, 11 months, he sold up everything and came to Christchurch, which was a massive risk and a bit scary. So, but the thing that I remember about him coming to Christchurch was being at the airport. And I'd been at the airport lots of times to meet women partners and generally get disapproving looks. But this time, this man came out, and I just burst into tears, of course, because I'm a crier. And we had this huge hug. And when we came up for air, every person around there had a lovely smile on their face. So I really felt really acutely at that moment that heterosexual privilege that Adrienne Rich, I think, is it, talks about. And I felt, I didn't feel good about it. It didn't sit well with me. And actually, I used to be really, I used to love the lesbian community in Christchurch, but once I've sort of realised that I was gaining all this heterosexual privilege, that was actually quite unwanted for me. I didn't actually want it. I liked being a dyke, and I liked people realising I was a dyke, except for those times when you were invisible. And I too actually went through the short hair thing too. Yeah, I really related to your story.
Wish we had about pictures.
No. I still looked hot though. Anyway, sorry. So that was really big for me, that heterosexual privilege. And so I actually began to retreat from the lesbian community at that point. I never felt pushed out at all. I just felt like I didn't really belong anymore. So I exiled myself, I guess, in a way. Anyway, so we went to America after a bit because we, the immigration requirements were that it was impossible for us to show that we had a long enough duration relationship for him to stay. So because I'm a teacher, I could get work easily in America. So I did, and went over there and discovered the Butch Femme community there, and met amazing people, met our best friends, or people who were best man and all that sort of thing. Were the people that own butchfemme.com. So our life was all Butch Femme, and it was amazing. It was really wonderful. Like, all of a sudden, we had lots of parties and we had lots of people who were just like us, and I've never felt so full of peace as I did then, with all these butchers and all these femmes and lots of trans people around. And it was the most wonderful time. We spent 3 years heavily involved in the Butch Femme community, and to a lesser degree in the BDSM community. Not Butch Femme necessarily, but, you know, just BDSM community there. And, we had a marvellous time. So when we came back, it was quite a shock, really, because we're back in New Zealand. And we moved to Auckland rather than to Christchurch, because I knew I could get work in Auckland rather than Christchurch. So, and I had some family here. So suddenly we went from this amazing euphoric place full of butchers and femmes to Auckland. We didn't know anybody, really, and certainly didn't know any queers. And it's kind of just turned completely around, because Chris's job is quite high profile. You remember Chris when you see him walking down the street, and people do remember him. So we've actually become very closeted since we've been back, and we live the life of a straight couple now, which is awful when I think of the bloody heterosexual privilege all over again, and that we can do that. And I felt some guilt for quite a while about other people that weren't able to access that kind of privilege. Anyway, so here we are today. But luckily I have met a few butchers and a few femmes, and I believe it was Claire that my friend Claire in Wellington, you probably know Claire. She's just a huge breath of fresh air. So she's like my main femme friend, really. So I treasure those femme relationships. I'm not quite sure where I'm going now. That's probably about all for the moment.
I got a big voice, so I don't think you can probably leave it outside and you're going to get it. So. You know, I didn't plan for this, and I'm really sorry. So she's probably told me, what, a week or so ago? But I probably forgot a lot about that. But we'll carry on nonetheless. Hi, my name's Chris. I'm American, so sorry about that. probably told most of what I was going to say. Thanks, baby.
Sorry.
But I guess I could talk a little bit about transitioning and, for me, what it means and how it's affected me. And it's been a roller coaster ride, but I think that's pretty much my existence. And I suppose that's a good thing because you learn a lot, you do a lot, and it's cool. But I guess, personally for me, my identity is more of a fluid. You know, it doesn't really stop. It's not either or, because I don't think life works that way. So you'd have, I guess, living my life as a lesbian was, I don't know, I wouldn't say difficult, but definitely different, because it's the opposite of what it is now. I mean, as a dyke, you ain't sneaking up on anybody with what you are, you know? No one's going to wonder, I wonder if that's a lesbian, you know? Or butch, yeah, definitely, you know? But as trans, not only did I lose that identity as female, but also identity as queer. Just lost it. It was like almost sad, like something died. Because, you know, women would see you and they'd see you as a dude, and then, which is what I want, but you lost in the queer community, like lesbians. You'd see somebody, you know, your gay eyes, boop, 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 and you see him, you know, you give him that look, like, sup? And they look at you like, you know, or worse, that one hurts, hey, you know, you get that look. But, you win them over anyways. You do. You do, because, you know, especially in the tattoo industry when they come out for tattoos and stuff, you want to just say that, you know, especially when you get soft butch or butch come in and you know it and you feel it and everything. And you can't really go, can't just out yourself. That part's kind of bad, but I think I didn't do it for that, you know, just did it because I needed to, honestly. But I would definitely recommend going up to the, look it up online, the Butch Femme community. It's good. Gives you lots of resources and talks more about the dynamics of transition and queer and the fluidity. There you go. Thanks. Marry a teacher. It's always good. But, fuck, I was really hoping people would just ask me questions. And if you want to, do that, because I think I'd just lose track. And it's hard for me to really put words together unless somebody has a specific thing to say, you know, like, you know, questions.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm just tanking going down. And it's like, oh, crash.
I'm thinking.